Your mission to defend the transitional government. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld key enforcement powers of the Voting Rights Act while giving local authorities more ability to opt out of jurisdiction in a closely watched case. This mixed decision surprised many observers who expected the High Court to strike down Section 5, the enforcement clause of the Voting Rights Act. The majority decision written by Chief Justice John Roberts allowed the plaintiff, the Northwest Austin Municipal Utility District, to be exempt from the Voting Rights Act. The Texas Public Utility elects its board of directors, which before the court decision had to meet the standards of the Voting Rights Act. Debo Ajabile of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund observed, "This case was brought to tear the heart out of the Voting Rights Act, and today that effort failed." But Yale Law School professor Heather Gerken fears the Supreme Court will axe Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act the next opportunity it gets. The majority decision spent a great deal of time evaluating the constitutionality of Section 5 and reads like a rough draft of a decision to kill it. In recent weeks, the unregulated hedge fund industry has raised its profile on Capitol Hill and boosted ties with key congressional Democrats like Senator Chris Dodd and Congressman Barney Frank, who will oversee the overhaul of financial regulation. The push is being led by former Republican Congressman Richard Baker, the former chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, who now runs the hedge fund lobby, the Managed Fund Association. According to the New York Times, Baker's push influenced the Obama administration's proposal to overhaul financial regulation, giving the Federal Reserve Board more power over large financial institutions. The proposal called for registration of hedge funds with the Securities and Exchange Commission, a non-issue for most hedge funds. Hedge fund managers are more concerned with federal rules on leveraging, shorting practices, and the use of derivatives. Baker is trying to keep hedge funds free from oversight by the Federal Reserve. The hedge fund lobbyist says the funds are not systemically important to the financial system and do not need Federal Reserve oversight. Many critics dismiss this claim, noting that hedge funds played a significant role in last year's market meltdown.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. We're going to be continuing an analysis of the City Council's sellout vote on the medical marijuana moratorium, looking ahead to the fifth weekend at Bunny's Shoes and a 4th of July protest, and generally kicking up a little dust and perhaps taking some of your calls. Stay tuned, and I'll be right back. That was Black Death All-Stars. Actually, they came downtown. They were playing some lively numbers. I picked up their CD, and so we'll play a little of them tonight and perhaps some other groups too. Again, you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. For the next 2 hours, more or less, you're going to be listening to, as mentioned before, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's a show concerned with local stuff here in Santa Cruz, but for those of you listening to it at a distant location, it may have some bearing on what's going on in your neck of the woods. We occasionally touch on international issues. I'll be reading a little bit about Honduras here and there, and, oh, you know, the latest torture cover-ups from the Obamatons in Washington and so forth. But a lot of that you get elsewhere. You don't really need to listen to me kind of recycle some lefty website stuff. But I'll do that anyway because it interests me, and I still think it has some relevance to us. What's really relevant and what you can't find elsewhere are interviews on the streets about what's going on in Santa Cruz around issues that impact poor people, actually impact everybody, but particularly impact poor people. The one we were following on Sunday, and the show is also has a Sunday version, longer one, starts usually at 9:30, sometimes earlier, actually usually a little earlier. I'll kind of zip into the prior broadcaster, Thomas Lebbett, who's very nice to me, and play flashbacks from earlier times, and that's cool. Encourage you to listen in on Sunday mornings. In case you want to catch old shows, www.huffsantacruz.org is the website to go to, huffsantacruz.org, and then you click on the name of the show, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and you can get to the show. A lot of them have rather elaborate descriptions, although you do have to spin through the show to find out what you're looking for, in case you're looking for a particular speech or a particular person's commentary or particular phone interview. So that is hopefully something that you can do and that will serve the public. I'm kind of hoping that all these archives are worth something, and we'll see. So let's begin today with a continuation of the Santa Cruz City Council meeting of June 23rd, that part of it that was talking about medical marijuana. I'm actually going to be playing some of the earlier council meeting Krita, as we used to call crap, on Sunday when I come back for the longer show. But for now, let's just pick up on where we were. And just to remind you, what happened on that in that council session was that the city council unanimously, in spite of the obvious fact that there's no moratorium needed for anything in particular, passed an emergency moratorium that essentially cut the ground out from under at least one applicant, probably two, for our medical marijuana dispensaries, the first two to apply that I'm aware of since Ken Sampson's club opened in 2006 or 2007. 2006, I think it was. Lisa Molyneux, her club opened in 2005, and they've kind of had a monopoly lock on the club situation in Santa Cruz. So other entrepreneurs are interested. They've actually paid up to the fees. You're going to hear one guy talking at length about this. And in fact, this tape is a continuation outside, me interviewing Stuart. First name is Stuart. His last name starts with a G. I think you'll catch it on the tape. Don't have it right here for you. But he was one of the two applicants, the only one to appear, actually, at City Council on the Tuesday before last to talk about the issue. But he did talk to us at length about it outside. The earlier part of this interview can be found online, again, as mentioned, at the huffsantacruz.org website. And I did some of that, I believe it was either last Sunday or last Thursday. You can check that out. But let's hear the rest of it, and you're welcome to call in. There is a call-in number here, 427-3772, 427-3772, and I will put you on the air. If you want to catch me off air because you have some discreet things to say, perhaps a large bribe of some kind, who knows, maybe some death threats, all those should be put on my home phone at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Really just kidding about the death threats, but anything you want to say, critical or laudatory or informative or whatever, and you don't want to put it on the air, but you think it should come to my attention, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. That's also the phone number for HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the civil rights group I work with that will be holding the protest on Saturday, 4th of July, at 1 o'clock in front of Bunny Shoes. Again, trying to get the community aware of the reactionary, repressive behaviors of the Downtown Association and the businesses that are either supporting them or standing aside as the movers and the shakers in the community criminalize homeless people and homelessness as a status in Santa Cruz, or continue, I should say, their criminalization, but ratchet it up with the new paramilitary hosts in their bumblebee costumes, the injunction against sleeping for the two homeless musicians, Anna and Miguel, and, of course, the whole raft of anti-homeless laws that gives the police essentially free rein downtown to mess with whoever they want to. And, of course, the sleeping ban that makes it illegal to sleep outside in Santa Cruz on any public property whatsoever. There's no exceptions. After 11 o'clock at night, the very act of sleeping becomes a crime in Santa Cruz. This in a town with shelter for less than 5% of Santa Cruz's 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. But medical marijuana, actually not medical marijuana, just, yeah, it is medical marijuana. Sorry, I get a little rattled sometimes because the city council has been playing around with a gutting measure. It's gutting the medical marijuana, or gutting the recreational marijuana. Actually, all marijuana has a Measure K commission, which is supposed to oversee the police department and make sure that marijuana enforcement in private for medical or recreational purposes by adults is the lowest priority. And that has been gutted by a combination of city council, police department, city attorney, and city staff activity. And I've talked about that elsewhere. Anyway, here's some, again, we're talking outside city council with a number of people, including Craig Canada, who's a medical marijuana patient who's also been homeless, who's had a number of run-ins with the police as he was homeless, who were essentially criminalizing him because of his homeless status or his use of medical marijuana. And the guy who was trying to open one of these clubs, I think his name is Stuart, and I think he had a couple of friends around who are being supportive and also join the discussion.
Clubs would be the same. What if you were able to open?
And my question's a little cut off there. What I was asking was, would your rates be cheaper? And this was really a key issue that Anita Henry and I talked about on Sunday. Anita Henry is one of the only surviving advocates for those who want to end the drug wars and the marijuana wars, who's on the Measure K committee, which now meets only twice a year thanks to the enforced negligence of the Santa Cruz City Council. She was on the show on Sunday, and one of her concerns, and one of the reasons that she seemed ambivalent, indeed at one point said she supported this moratorium, which I don't, moratorium on all medical marijuana clubs, is that she is really upset about profiteering at medical marijuana clubs, such as Lisa Milano's Greenway and Ken Sampson's club. And my concern is, you know, I don't like profiteering anywhere it happens, but I think we need to have more marijuana clubs open. Certainly we need better rules. We don't need an anti-marijuana mentality masquerading as some kind of public safety guardian moving in. And that's what the arguments were in the staff report, that because of the federal law, the supposed drawback in federal enforcement of federal laws against medical marijuana, that there's going to be a rush of applications to Santa Cruz because two people have applied, two more have taken out application papers, and an uncertain number of people who supposedly have been flooding the, I guess it's the Zoning Commission or the Public Works Department or the Planning Commission, I'm not quite sure which department handles this, have been, you know, they have to suddenly change all their rules and re-examine everything and put a moratorium. In fact, the current laws about opening medical marijuana clubs in Santa Cruz is extremely restrictive. It's really hard to do. It took 5 years to get the first club open. It took a special variance to get Greenway open. It requires a special use permit hearing. There's a whole bunch of restrictions, including an appeal process. And all that has been essentially swept aside by anti-marijuana sentiment under Mayor Matthews' gentle reign at the city council. Actually, it's not gentle in the least. She's not very good about this stuff, which is the gentlest thing I can say about her. Here we go.
To acquire high quality medicine, it requires much higher wholesale price. So there certainly would be different levels. And those who can afford the more boutique quality of medicine can certainly help to offset the costs of the compassion bags that he's talking about. There is a need, though, to have this, because there's a desire for the higher quality medicine, and it is always in that higher bracket. It's a lot more to produce, and there's less of it produced.
Right,
you know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. We're trying to get some assurance so that is there any kind of assurance you give the community that this would be any different than these others are closed?
Well, I think that's part of what we're aiming to do, is compete with pricing and just being cool, being a place that people want to come back to, being a place that people don't.
Supply, the price isn't going to go down.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what we get here is a lot of gobbledygook from either the guy who's opening the club, or I think he's the co-applicant, I'm not sure. But he's not giving us any kind of assurance or any clarity that low-income people are going to have better access at this club than they were at the two previous clubs. That doesn't change my opinion that a moratorium in Santa Cruz is a bad thing at this time, particularly with the lack of information given by the staff that simply wants to shut off all applications for essentially 70 days. 45 is what they're saying, but since there's no meetings planned in August, it's going to be for 70 days. They say, well, what's the matter with that? You know, let's reexamine it then, yada, yada. Well, the people who have applied have put down deposits for their leases, and they've paid this stuff, and they claim, at least one of them, that they're not going to be able to afford this. And I'm familiar with this gutting process, this delaying process, this restricting more process, this stopping clubs from opening, because I saw it happen in 2000 with two other clubs, both of whom involved Kate Wells, a local attorney who was also involved in the original underground club on Maple Street. And what happened with the clubs in 2000 was the city council passed a series of regulations that killed one of the clubs. And then when they tried to open a second one on a second location, they changed the regulations and made it worse so that it killed that club. So if I understand it properly, both clubs were killed. I may have my dates a little wrong. I think the first regulations were March 2000, and then the latter ones were in the summer. But it was done only with consultations with WHAM and Valerie Corral, and no other medical marijuana providers were included in the conversations and discussions that I'm aware of. At least I know that Kate Wells was not. And so what you have here essentially is prohibitionism operating under the mask of reform. And I also don't want to, give any particular slack to the people who want to open up a club and make a lot of money, and yet at the same time don't want to make any commitments to low-income people. It's sort of like Mike Rotkin, who passed the Office of Compassionate Use, supposedly a city distribution center for marijuana, but he assured us it won't open up until the feds declare everything is legal. Even after, so it's interesting, there's an interesting irony here. One didn't hear a word about the Office of Compassionate Use when Rotkin, really the only speaker at the city council, who said anything about this legislation, which was, oh yeah, I'm going to support it because we need more time. And he was very vague, as was the staff report. More time for what? The requirements for a special use permit hearing and the amount of time the staff can already delay this is significant. They don't need more time that I'm aware of. They simply want to stop these applicants right now, and they're not saying why, and they're not giving them the full opportunity to speak about the issues that we would normally get, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 minutes at a special use permit hearing, which was scheduled for early July. Instead, that's all been shut down because the city council, with two-minute Matthews, has allowed the applicants only 2 minutes each and allowed all their opponents 2 minutes and allowed the opponents to range free at denouncing the clubs without allowing for any kind of the detailed analysis and keeping them on the topic, which was a medical marijuana moratorium, not the particular value of any particular club. It was grotesque and almost amusing in how stark the city council was in essentially rubber stamping the staff report. There was zero discussion between the end of the public comment period, discussion by the city council, and the city council vote. It just went right to a vote, zip, and they zipped it right through. It's like they had all kind of nodded, looked at each other, winked, and away they went. It's, and I called it, for the first time, I don't usually call use the word corruption with respect to a city council, since that usually implies payoffs and bribes and, you know, kickbacks and all that sort of thing. And I have no evidence that there's any of that going on here. But, you know, I posed, how could this happen? How could the city council vote this in as a so-called emergency with no emergency actions, no emergency criteria provided, unless they were either blind, stupid, corrupt, or just insufferably and terminally subservient to the staff. Of course, unfortunately, a lot of those adjectives seem to fit, or a number of them do. Anyway, back to the conversation outside the city council, and perhaps your calls, 427-3772.
You know, one of the things that I would like to
this
see
is Craig
addressed,
Canada speaking.
Probably never will. They have like a 600-foot limit from recovery and, drug abuse recovery and from mental health. And, you know, Fred Gardner had an article in 2006 in Counterpunch. He interviewed doctors. 30% of medical marijuana patients use it for psychiatric and other, for depression and other psychiatric reasons. 60% of them use it for pain. The reason they use it for pain is because it works better than the opiates, and they use it to get off the opiates. And all sorts of drug habits. It's just ridiculous to me that they have this phobia about having it near mental health or drug rehab. You know,
it's an old stigma. It is.
I could go on and on about this. 10% of Americans taking some sort of SSRI. 5% of them, like me, will experience manic psychosis as a result of it. It destroyed my life. That's 1.5 million maniacs waiting to explode. And, you know, it's all of these. Marijuana is useful for all the conditions for which they prescribe the SSRIs, and you know, they've got this in their ordinance. It's you know.
When did you hear that this moratorium was coming up?
SSRIs, for those who don't know, are, I think, serotonin receptor inhibitors. They're the fraudulent pharmaceutical profiteers who, along with psychiatrists, are claiming to have some sort of brain chemistry solution to, quote, mental illness, are claiming that these SSRIs, as well as, I guess, dopamine effectors, are effectively, that the current pharmaceuticals, which are prescribed for manic depressive, so-called manic depressive and so-called schizophrenic ailments, to use terms that some regard as completely bogus, are affecting the brain chemistry, and therefore the brain chemistry is that they can treat it like some kind of actual physical ailment, which has recently, I believe, been shown to be hogwash. And in terms of results, it's also been shown, in fact, counter, actually more than hogwash, these psychiatric drugs are often much more toxic than the alternative of letting people survive and struggle and work out their problems without these extensive medications, but with some kind of community support. And that they found that World Health Organization figures have found that people in third world countries survive a hell of a lot better when they go through so-called mental health episodes or life crises without the drugs than with the drugs. Of course, you know, in any particular case, for all of you drug users out there who are using them or friends who are using them, you know, it doesn't necessarily apply in your case because there are differences. Anyway, the point here has to do with the fact that medical marijuana clubs in Santa Cruz are not allowed to be opened within 600 feet of all kinds of things, and one of them is mental health facilities. And you don't have these restrictions on pharmacies, which have far more toxic stuff. I don't even think you have these restrictions on bars, which have extremely toxic alcohol. But you do have these restrictions for medical marijuana. It's just, it's reefer madness mentality, which Santa Cruz should not be supporting, obviously, and yet which a progressive city council led by Vice Mayor Mike Rotkin and a two-minute Matthews, the mayor, is just rubber stamping right down the line.
Thursday afternoon, Tuesday before the...
Four days ago?
Yeah, Thursday before the Tuesday that actually happened today.
It's just today, yeah.
The first I heard of it was a comment in the topics.
The question here, I'm sorry, I'm breaking this up a little, but I think the question that was asked was, when did the applicants first hear that this was coming up before City Council? And essentially it was 4 days before it came up.
Topics, comments on the Sentinel, that was Saturday. The next day there was the article on Sunday. That was the first I heard of it.
I think this has to do with the City Council's willingness to succumb to whatever story the planning department tells them. I mean, it is not, I mean, I think you could have brought up 16 experts and they would have still voted the same way.
I have a hard time believing that they're getting a call every day about this.
Yeah, there's no stats they're presenting.
That seems pretty excessive. You know,
is it the same person, a different person calling? That's still only 30.
At one point we were told there were three applicants, and then that there were five. And now they're saying that they've gotten hundreds of calls.
You know what you might do is make a Public Records Act request asking for any documentation of incoming applicant calls in the last 2 months. I mean, it's not going to help you with this.
I'm not sure we can reverse the moratorium.
You might be able to stop the second portion of it by public protest.
Yeah.
You got to organize people to protest.
The second portion of the moratorium comes in September when the staff member reports to the City Council that they haven't had enough time to consider some emergency, the wonderful emergency conditions, which weren't specified, under which this moratorium was granted, and deal with the legal changes that are necessary, that they get 9 months and a number of days, or maybe it's 10 months, a number of days, somewhere up in that range, to continue the moratorium if the City Council votes for it.
What this kind of means is it needs an organization besides WAM for medical marijuana patients and for marijuana anti-prohibitionists that meets regularly. It's not going to do anything right away, but that's what this town needs.
And Craig Canada is proposing, and I think Anita Henry proposed it on the air, an actual working group of activists fighting the war against marijuana in Santa Cruz and organizing people around that issue. This was done, of course, a couple decades ago when the fight for measure, I think it was Proposition A, was put on the ballot in the county that essentially supported medical marijuana in the county. And then 215 passed the state, Proposition 215, 4 years, 3 years later in 1996. And all this time there was an underground club. I was involved in it at the Maple Street location, Maple and Cedar Streets in downtown Santa Cruz. That's now a banned location. The medical marijuana restrictions do not allow clubs in the downtown area, so they killed the Pacific Coast Cooperative, I believe, in 2004 when they tried to open, and they killed another club recently, I think the successors to the Pacific Coast Cooperative. Again, they've got all the tools to kill any particular club they want. The problem they have is if a number of applicants show up with all kinds of reasonable concerns, they're going to have trouble rationalizing all this to the community, it seems like. So the best way to avoid that is to pass a moratorium.
I think the political atmosphere is probably a lot more lenient towards that now, too. I mean, you can now, you know, what WAN was doing and got busted for now seems like fantasy.
Although they're still prosecuting those people, those kinds of people. I mean, they haven't stopped in spite of Obama's claims, as you know.
Right. There have been a couple of. I know there's a couple of. I know of one in San Francisco.
Lynch was recently sentenced to a year, I believe.
And that was the guy from San Luis Obispo.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Sure. And Emma Lenz from in San Francisco. I think it was at on Valencia or...
Claims that there's this big turnaround, I suspect they got a bunch of concern from neighbors, and then they translated that into the other, and they've got some people in the planning department who are either apprehensive about the neighbors or don't like marijuana. I mean, I'm not sure which it is.
I can say I know there are some folks on the west side that are landowners and larger business owners that are definitely against it because they feel it brings a certain element
the riffraff
community, and the implication is that the element would be out to burglarize our establishment there.
Oh, I didn't see that appear in any of the letters. Oh, it actually did appear in a couple letters.
And not being able to break into our establishment because of our higher level of security than is required of, you know, any of the brewery
or the wine shops.
Yeah, they would go next door and rip off the jewelry maker, or they would go to the gift shop across the street.
You're going to force everybody to get better security services.
Well,
so that's the problem, eh?
Well, part of our being there is that we do provide more of a more security for the whole street. We're required to roam out beyond our establishment and pick up trash, keep people from loitering, make sure people aren't ingesting.
So you're offering the city council a joint each before this meeting.
No.
Medically, it might have been a positive step.
I'm not sure. Maybe psychologically.
He wouldn't get along with me because I think I should be able to smoke anywhere I want to.
Shockingly enough.
I don't intend to sit all day and watch Jerry.
Again, we've been talking with
co-applicant B.
Thank you, co-applicant B. To actually have. There are only six or seven spots actually available for marijuana clubs to open in Santa Cruz. And again, we're talking with Stuart.
So if you look at the Harvey West and the Mission Corridor and the West Side, the places that are zoned to have a dispensary, there's only about five or six open leases that are meet the minimum required distance of 600 feet from any school, like a rehab center. And then out of those, there's only two or three that have landlords that will actually rent you. And so we are in one of the two or three only possible locations.
How long did it take you to find this location and actually negotiate this?
It took us a month and a half. And the other location we actually had a lease on that we gave up when we chose to go with the one we went with.
Total costs to you this so far have been?
Like I said, about 600 plus hours and over $12,000.
And you're planning to go to to Mike Ferry tomorrow at the planning department and say, what's up with the money I gave you, the $2,000 for administrative fee, and what do you expect his response will be?
He will say it still stands, and your hearing won't be in July or August. It'll probably be in September, if you get one, if they don't ask for another 10 months moratorium in September.
To which you will say?
I hope the landlords don't mind me not paying the lease because I can't afford to wait that long. And there's a good chance that the landlords will rent out to someone else, and then there's a question of if they will give me a permit for a place I don't actually control.
Also, is the process the city council has to make a second vote for this 9-month extension, however long it is, or is that just a decision by the planning department?
It's a request from the planning department.
It's a request that has to be voted on again.
Is that unclear?
Yeah, I wasn't clear on that either, so...
Although, if you look at the actual ordinance, it does seem to, if it's as quoted by the staff report, which is always problematic since they seem to be rather unduly partisan against the medical marijuana clubs and in favor of their own power, it's not, this, but the reading, the wording of the ordinance as they put it is that it's not, it is a city council decision again, it's not one that can be made unilaterally by a staff member.
It seems to me like they can request more time and then just go into a 10-month period.
I don't think they have to vote on it because it's all written in the ordinance. They need more time, they get more time.
So, in fact, all they were misleading the public by suggesting it was 45 days. It actually, as I suggest...
A minimum of 70 days before the next possible hearing, and most likely it could be over...
Because of the fact that they take a vacation in August.
Because there's no hearings held when 45 days expires, which they knew. They could have called it 60 days or 70 days, or they could have called it 10 or 15 days, or they could have set a moratorium on any new applications and rightfully process the ones they already received.
And in fact, do you
one word, additional applications, additional, would have let them learn from the experience of going through these two applications. Doesn't mean we get them, doesn't mean the permit's issued, but they would at least learn from the community and have specific empirical data representing each actual location and each actual operator. Instead, they just have some subjective idea that a staff department member is going to try to figure out while he's doing everything else. Absolutely.
Did you notice on the, when they wrote out in that binder that we're looking at. Yeah, the green binder. At the bottom of it, they said there'll be no fiscal agenda. There'll be no fiscal impact from this moratorium. So meaning that they're not hiring a consultant or anyone to really go out and, do a study and see.
Sit on their ass and let the moratorium extend.
Yes.
They just don't want to make a real decision or actually participate in the discussion. They want to stop the community from their input and put it off on a staff member and hope that they get something the community doesn't be upset
about.
What
do you think is the motivation for this?
I think they should hire me to do the study.
I think so, too.
Hell yeah.
I like your haircut.
Because they're lame. They won't.
No, they won't. If you talk to either Lisa Molyneux or Ken Sampson about the problems they had opening up their club, or Kate Wells when she had a club years ago.
We left a message for Lisa, and I actually had a lengthy conversation with Ken. He said he was going to try to show up today, but he thought it was at 7 o'clock, as most of the public did, because this was a kind of ram down the public's throat.
How can you say that about our city council?
And that, of course, is another point which I'm always making, that Cynthia Matthews as mayor and Coonerty before her and Rotkin before him were pushing for they scheduled meetings at 3 o'clock instead of at 7 o'clock when more people might be able to attend.
It's pretty obvious.
Seeing is believing.
Yeah.
How can the public support you in any way now that you've gotten the door in your face from the city council? What can the public do, if anything, to be helpful in this situation to make sure that new clubs do open up?
Ask that their input be heard and that these decisions aren't left up to staff in the planning department. Ask that the community involvement and due process takes place with public hearings, zoning commission hearings, the right to appeal.
Of which there are none scheduled, though, right? Except I guess city council meets again in 2 weeks.
Everything's been shut down. It's all determined on the staff now. There's no more community involvement. The community
pitchforks and torches on City Hall?
Community was limited to less than 2 minutes each. No more than a dozen people spoke today. And there was no mailing notifying anyone of this hearing.
Now, you've already said that you're reluctant to go on the radio, though I've captured your voice on this tape, because you're afraid that this is going to be spun in a negative way. You're going to be seen, you're going to draw out the angry, we don't want no stinking marijuana people in our neighborhood, or, yeah, man, a king of marijuana, that sort of stuff, which, might not contribute to either your credibility on this issue or as a general contractor, which you also do, but it's hard times for general contracting, right?
Well, we've actually, our general contracting business is doing just fine.
Really?
Thank God.
Well, that's good. That's good. I heard construction was going into the pits.
It is, but we've got a successful business going. Yeah. So I just don't want to subject myself to the criticism of the community unless it's a one-on-one personal discussion between two rational people where we can talk about the topics, but I'm not going to subject myself to angry emails and people who don't know me just yelling names at me. It's just not worth it to me. And if anyone wants to contact us, like we've always said when we started this, we'd be glad and more than happy to meet with you.
Give a number or an email where you suggest people can reach you, although you get the possibility of angry people, perhaps the possibility of supportive people.
The West Side CC, is Pete?
What's an email where folks, supporters and detractors, mostly supporters, hopefully can reach you?
We invite detractors or supporters. Yeah. They email us as often and as.
At what address?
And frequently as they want to. Westside MCC@gmail.
M as in Mary, CC.
Westside MCC at Gmail.
At
gmail.com.
So, we've been talking here after the bloody aftermath with, again,
Stuart Kriege.
Anybody else wish to identify themselves?
Kenny Eptekerev.
An anonymous supporter. Second anonymous supporter in.
Anonymous.
And another anonymous supporter. Thank you very much for talking. And
part of the outreach.
So we had a couple of additional points. I'm being told that you actually called in advance. Four out of seven were...
All seven.
All seven?
We called all seven city council members and talked to them personally on the phone. Mm-hmm. And out of the seven city council members, four of them said they had no bias and no problem with another dispensary as long as it was done right and met the guidelines. And that's why we decided to proceed and spend the money on the application to move forward.
It sounds very much like what happened to Kate Wells in 2000 when they dumped a whole bunch of money into the dispensary and the city council suddenly turned around and changed the rules, which made it illegal for them to open where they'd already gotten a lease. This is on Seabright. I'll give you her number. You can call her up and actually get more details from her. And the reason I mention it to you and to the community is this is a continuing problem. It's not just your problem. It's the problem of the next person that comes along and the problem of other people who want to have access to marijuana who don't get it because of what? Is it reefer madness? Is it bureaucratic bullshit? Is it a bunch of NIMBY neighbors? What the hell?
No, it is. The neighbors are all NIMBY.
Every letter in the binder to the city council ended with, I'm for marijuana, I'm for medical marijuana, I'm even for it in recreational use. What they weren't for was compatibility of their neighborhood, where they have 8 wineries, a distillery, and a brewery giving away free alcohol, controlled substances for free across the street. And we have security guards monitoring that street. We call them greeters, but we'd have someone standing out there watching the street. We have to have multiple prescriptions. There's no consumption on site. And yet we're the evil people. And we're actually a nonprofit corporation reinvesting all of our earnings back into the surrounding businesses and neighborhood.
The irony is that you may remember Mayor Matthews' first statement was, I don't want you to talk about the benefits of the club or its location or whether it's suitable, but whether there should be a moratorium on this particular ordinance. Every single one of those people who came up and talked about this who were opposed or who supported the moratorium, with a few exceptions, spent a lot of time talking about why the club itself was bad for their neighborhood. And that, you'll notice she didn't cut them off. She didn't, you know, she cut off Tomasi, and I've seen her cut off other people, but she didn't cut them off. So, and I think it also has to be said, I understand from an anonymous source that one of your group contacted a council member before this particular thing came up. I'm not going to say who. And that council member was informed that you wanted some time to speak.
No, the council member wasn't informed.
That wasn't informed of that. You didn't know about that.
No.
Well, now you do. Yeah. So just get in your time machine and go back. Yeah, you only got 2 minutes to speak at this, as you probably know, because we're going to play the entire city council crap as well as this ensuing conversation.
How long is the show?
On Sundays it's 3.5 hours, and on Thursdays it's 2 hours. So. Thank you very much, everybody.
And that was Stuart and Kenny, Stuart was one of the applicants, and I think Kenny was either a friend of the applicant or a co-applicant, talking to me outside the Tuesday, June 23rd city council meeting where they... City Council unanimously essentially killed all applications for marijuana that are pending or stalled them, requiring people to wait until September when the Planning Commission is supposedly going to come back with new rules, presumably more restrictive rules, to be added to even all the already very restrictive rules around medical marijuana dispensaries. You can find more on this issue online if you go to santacruzindymedia.org, specifically, just if you Google for Santa Cruz medical marijuana, you'll probably find it. But if you go to Santa Cruz Indie Media and look for the stories on medical marijuana, there are a number of them there. I think there's a main story in the center page of that website, and a lot of that is discussed. Some of the laws are also there for you to look at in case you want to see what the actual ordinances are. Craig Canada does an interesting job of putting that stuff together. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and I'm Robert Norris, and you're whoever you may be, and you can call in at 427-3772 if you want. And while you ponder this, here's a little music from that inimitable Black Death All-Stars group.
Lights in the city, let all shine for me. The lights in the city, let all shine.
I don't get another beer, I'll never get to sleep. When I walked the streets of Pittsburgh, kept the hours of a ruined man. So I woke up in Boston with a pistol and a broken hand and didn't move, a pistol didn't shoot. But pressed into a teller's nose, the teller told the truth, 'cause the light in the city, they don't shine for me. The lights in the city, they don't shine for me. The lights in the city, they don't shine for me. I'm taking up my money, going back to Tennessee. When I put that pistol in my belt, grabbed my sack of cash, I felt the cold skin stiff against a small part of my back. I laid low in the suburbs and I got so fucking high. And I came to with brick measures and a more need mine. 'Cause the lights in the city, they don't shine for me. The lights in the city, they don't shine for me. The lights in the city, they don't shine for me. I've taken up my money going back to Tennessee.
Again, Black Death All-Stars, and the name of that selection was Lights in the City. So, here's a little flashing back a little bit here. I'm going to play something from, I think it was May, and the reason I'm playing this is, this is about the struggle for a non-discriminatory policy at Jack's Hamburger Place, which we succeeded in getting, and it's all hearts and flowers and, you know, easy going and good burgers, if you like burgers, at Jack's Hamburgers, which is at Cedar and Lincoln Streets, for those of you who want to go buy a burger next to the Nickelodeon, if you don't mind buying a burger next to the house that Mayor Cynthia Matthew owns and across from the Calvary Episcopal Church, which bans homeless people from its lawns 5 days a week. But that's another story. The problem we had with Jack's was we'd gotten reports like the following.
What was
her problem with you, did you say?
She didn't give me a justified reason. I asked them why they couldn't serve me. I said, why will you not serve me? I have my shirt, my shoes on. I have not been disrespectful. I came in here and I wanted to buy some food. And then the lady said she was going to call the cops if I didn't go there. And then, after that happened.
You have a skateboard with you now. You're wearing tennis shoes. You say she denied you service before?
Yeah.
And did she make any comments then as to why she was denying you service?
No, she never has, told any of us why she will. We just all assumed that she's just really getting mad at the people that were hanging out at the Red Church. I have no reason why, you know.
Now, are you a hanger-outer at the Red Church?
I was, yeah, until it got shut down because there's a no trespassing thing there now. I don't know what it's called, but something to do with no trespassing.
Now people don't hang out there on the grass anymore?
No, because if you do, the cops come within 5 minutes, and they give you a warning the first time, and if you don't, they're going to cite you for hanging out there. So
interesting. So, but this woman, what did she look like, the one who told you couldn't be there?
Short blonde hair. I think it's the owner lady. So, this is the funny part, was yesterday after it happened, I was standing on the corner, which is owned by the city. I don't think it's owned by Jack. So I was standing on the corner underneath the sign telling people about what she had done to me, you know, telling people, you know, they would not serve me here and I haven't done anything wrong. And so she threatened to call the police on me again.
Well, people can call the police all they want. They're a public service. But if you're not doing anything illegal, of course, we're going to be having this protest next week, as you know, at 3 o'clock on Wednesday,
yeah,
with video cameras, so that we'll see, you know, I presume that the public sidewalk is a public sidewalk. They have property. They can refuse to serve you. But I believe that they refuse to serve you because they're discriminating against you as a class. They may have some legal problem.
I believe so, too. I believe that they're definitely discriminating us as a class because it's just, you know, it's mostly homeless people that they have turned away. I've never seen them they've turned away like a couple of UCSC students, too, because they went in there and tried to buy for homeless people. You know, we sent our friends that come down from UCSC in there, and they, like, got turned away.
Do they have a list or a bunch of photographs? How do they know? Or is it just this one woman who turns people away?
It's like she tells them to turn people away. Like, she'll tell everybody there to turn people away. Like, if I was to go there right now and ask to buy some food, she'd be like, no, we can't serve you.
Well, how many days of the week is she actually there?
I don't know, but I guarantee if I still went there right now, even if she wasn't there, they would still refuse me service.
Yeah, because you've heard of people being refused service even when she wasn't there?
I don't know. The only time I've been refused service was when she was there, so.
And how many people have you actually seen or heard from directly who were turned away?
I can't count them on my fingers. So
this special person here.
I don't know if she's been served, like, refused service there.
You've been hassled at Jack's, the restaurant. No, so that's cool.
And again, I want to make it real clear that the reason I'm playing this is not to denounce Jack's at all, but to show that there was a real concern and some specifics that sounded not unreasonable to me, whatever actually was going on. And Connie of Jack's, the owner, one of the co-owners, insisted that there was no discrimination, but that there were problems with people not following health codes, and they also had gotten other problems that happened when the restaurant was closed, that they perhaps attributed to people hanging out on the lawn across the street, such as piss on the back door and piles of, on one occasion, or several occasions, feces, although that wasn't recent, at least not recent at this time. But what happened eventually, in spite of all these claims and counterclaims, the co-owner, Connie, sat down with some of us, and she, you know, we decided that the best thing to do is to have a non-discriminatory policy, which she feels she's done all along, but as you can hear, some don't, because you just heard this testimony from Mike of the Streets. And henceforth, I've heard no complaints, zero complaints about Jack's. And I think that's the way that I'm hoping issues can be resolved downtown with other businesses in a broader way around really more difficult issues like the sleeping ban, which the city is using to, they regard it as a tool for the police department. But the people who are affected by it, of course, have their health and safety threatened. You cannot make it essentially a crime to sleep at night if you want someone's health to be okay. Also, of course, they need to be able to go work in order to get food. They need to be able to have some legal place to sleep, or at least not have to be worried about being woken up by the police or have to hide out in separate little groups or even smaller individually in order to avoid police attention or harassment from bigots or troll busters, for that matter. And so the issue we're pressing on Saturday and have been pressing for the last 4 weeks is trying to get businesses up and down Pacific Avenue to put a pledge in their window that says simply this restaurant does not discriminate. We favor the right of the homeless community to sleep not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere. It's pretty simple in a number of places, including Taqueria Vallarta and Starbucks and I guess Pollo Loco. There's a whole list of the restaurants that have put this up online in case you want to go check Santa Cruz Indie Media. And there are others who have said they're going to, who want to support this idea that it's actually it's in the interest of business people not to make the law a joke and say you can't sleep after 11 o'clock at night, period, on any public property anywhere. It makes it more likely that people are going to, you know, ignore the law entirely, as some people do. Actually, as all homeless people have to in order to survive, unless they happen to have some private friend who can find them a place to sleep. And these kinds of laws have been overturned in Los Angeles and in San Diego and Sacramento, other places. I've talked about this on the air before. So come on down, 1 o'clock for the 4th of July celebration, and celebrate with us by fighting bigotry downtown. The store that we are in front of is Bunny Shoes. It's a store that, along with three others, signed declarations that increased the sleeping ban penalties for Miguel De Leon and Anna Richardson in a court injunction. Although that was not the original purpose of Bunny's, they have not repudiated it. They haven't put the pledge in their window. And we are essentially trying to mobilize community opinion so that at least one store can see how people feel about this issue. They may, if the community feels just fine about it, then Bunny's, I guess, will continue to do a roaring business. We've heard that nearby businesses have really had some problems because they kind of suffer from the shadow of Bunny's, in the sense that where the protest is against Bunny's, but other stores nearby, for example, one store that shares an entrance with them, the hat company, is getting real significant problems with their business. And the point is not to impoverish the merchants downtown. But if the merchants choose to come in mass to criminalize homeless people, as they did in January and February to City Council, if they choose to support this bogus kind of send the homeless to jail for sleeping injunction passed against two homeless street musicians, as a number of them did, at least four of them, and certainly no businesses have spoken out against this publicly, if they are backing this new set of militant, supposedly more militant out-of-town hosts or ambassadors, as the little para-police guys and gals in yellow and black that you now see on the street walking around are, if they're going to do this, then we ask those who are tourists, those who are potential customers, members of the community to sort of, you know, essentially vote with their dollars and let the stores know we're going to patronize stores that support human rights. We're not going to patronize those that don't. So that's what that's about. And here's a little more from the earlier controversy.
We're doing a poll.
They harass people, but
not you.
No.
No, that's good. And you're maintaining your anonymity, somebody, is that right?
Yes.
Is that because you are a notorious axe murderer? Why are you keeping a low profile?
Because if a rock happens to make its way through Jack's window, I don't want him to know who did it.
Well, are you suggesting you have the intention of engaging in vandalism?
I might do it if they don't start serving homeless people. It makes me very discouraged that I can't go get a hamburger just because I'm homeless.
But you have no intention at the moment of doing it.
No, not right now.
And again, reminding you, in fact, that it was not threats, it was not anger, but it was, in fact, a clear presentation of the issues and the determination to engage in public protest that I think raised the issue to the public extent that, you know, it was able to be resolved. And hopefully that's going to happen again downtown on Pacific Avenue with these other issues. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And here's some more street interviews from, I believe this is mid-May or late May.
So that's not, we're not talking about a criminal activity here, folks. So police officers, put your guns back in your holsters. We've been talking with
someone.
Thank you, someone. Somewhat chilly Monday evening, Memorial Day, May 25th, 2009. We're on the corner listening to probably illegally amplified guitar music at Soquel and Pacific. And the all right!
Beautiful, yeah.
And that's how it is, folks. We're on the sidewalk here, and it's about 10:20 on an overcast Thursday, May 28th, talking with
Danny.
And Danny,
Yep. You are outside, soon to go inside, though. Apparently you've got some indoor accommodations.
Yes, we do.
And you and your schnookums, if I can call them that, are, should we say, still plagued with camping tickets.
Yes.
How many camping tickets have you got?
I have two.
And he has?
Yeah, and I didn't. Two.
And how long, or what period of time did you get these tickets?
3 months.
So does this mean they're very generous with you, or that they've just missed you, or that, you know, what's the story? Why only two? You sleep out every night, but you only got two camping tickets.
The house broke it up, and that was it.
Are you just very clever campers? What's the deal?
Mm-hmm. We're just very clever campers.
Now, tell us some of your secrets here. What do you, hide out downtown, out of town, on top of town? You float off the coast? What goes on?
That was in the fire engine. Towards Spokenes, really.
Say that again?
Towards the Poconos, really. There's a lot of good places out there if they learn. People learn to hide further back. That's talking to everyone who's on the streets. Try going further back into the woods where they don't feel like going into small crevices.
Now, the Poconos is closed at night, theoretically, right?
Yeah.
And have you ever been hassled by Chief Ranger Wallace or any of his... Tell me about that.
No, I'm actually a bad one. He cut us a break when he saw how bad my knee was fractured.
And how long has your knee been injured?
Like I always had. Probably a week.
How is it now?
Better. I got rid of my crutches and I'm fine.
So, did he cut you a break in the sense that he didn't give you a ticket and moved on and said, keep camping here, but, you know, don't be seen? How did he cut you a break?
I'm like, okay. I'm not going to give you a camping ticket. Pack up and move on.
So he had you hobbling on to the next campsite.
Yes.
I see. How sweet of him. Did he propose a legal place for you to go?
No.
Did he offer to give you a ride there because you were injured?
No.
Not that there was any there that he might have offered you a ride to, because he didn't offer you any there.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you abandoning your illegal activities? Why aren't you simply continuing to flout the law?
There's a little more... I'm kind of actually born as a high classman. So we're not above the law. You're
law-abiding, eh?
Yeah, I try to.
So how did you get indoor lodging? Did you suddenly get work, or what was the deal? What kind of work do you do?
Actually, what's what my man's work? His SSI stuff is coming through and...
Disability.
Yes.
And what kind of disability, if he wishes to be known as for this, is he disabled with? You don't have to answer these questions.
Insane.
He's insane. Now, yet you live with him. Are you crazy yourself?
Yes, I am.
Do I get a hug?
Yes.
There you go. See what I mean, folks?
Have you ever tried to talk to him? So hungry.
And are you panhandling for food? Is that the idea?
Nice to be able to at least let people know.
Here we are downtown again on the 28th of May, Thursday, around noon, actually 12:25, at Cafe Campesino, talking with Fish. Fish, you're looking over the proposed final draft resolving problems at Jackson. You say you're pleased to see it.
Pleased, because everything that says that you can't do at Jackson, I never did. So, I mean, technically, they were just denying me service because I was hanging out with a few of the people that might have, or people that they were already making that stereotypical statement of.
Now, you were turned away how many times from Jax?
I was turned away
dozens.
Dozens. Like,
don't exaggerate.
I'd say about a dozen times.
A dozen.
This is Sam, his lawyer. Go ahead, Sam.
I'd say about a dozen times, give or take.
All right. And is that your recollection, or does it differ slightly from Sam?
It was at least 8 to 12 times.
And was it the same? Were the same people turning you away, and did they give you a reason when they did?
The people that were working there would look at me and then walk to the owner, and the owner would come out and tell me that they wouldn't serve me. Yes, it was Connie. She wouldn't serve me. And I'd keep asking why, and the only reason my voice would raise and come to swearing is because she would not give me a reason of why she wouldn't serve me.
When you asked for that question the first time before your voice was raised, did you get any kind of response, or what was your response?
Basically, I started asking asking questions, and then I started raising my voice because she started repeating herself like a broken record.
What did she say?
She said something like, I'm sorry, you're disturbing the customers, and you're going to have to leave.
Now, let me ask you about the number of people. Was this outside or inside this conversation took place?
This was inside.
And about what time of day?
It was probably around 11, maybe 2 o'clock.
And was it a busy day? Or?
It was a moderately busy day. There weren't a lot of people in line, but there were, like, you know, three tables that were filled inside and maybe two outside.
Now, we heard from Sam in an earlier interview, your associate here, that she was a regular customer of Jack's. She really liked the burgers.
Yeah.
And did you feel the same way?
I did. I really, really liked their stuff.
How much would you say you spent a week at Jack? Say that again?
I spent enough.
So you were a regular customer.
A regular customer.
Did you ever dine and dash, as they say?
Never.
Did you walk in without any shoes?
Never.
Perhaps no shirt?
Never.
Did you have smelly clothing on, as you now, for example? You look pretty unsmelly to me. You've got on new...
Actually, I smell like a Bounty sheet right now because my clothes have been washed.
I see, yeah. You smell... So there actually isn't a bad detergent smell, which some people are allergic to, hence a good reason for excluding you from this kind of cafe.
I know fabric softener can be very offensive, and I would understand why they would turn my money down.
Well, at least you're not wearing strong deodorant.
Yes, that's true.
All right. Well, what about, you know... What we really need to do is actually add some positive odor to the whole situation.
You know, I think I might have been wearing deodorant that day, actually.
So, in other words, you were wearing the wrong kind of deodorant. Perhaps you need to... Should we...
Anybody else have any suggestions?
An internet activist.
Yeah. Raise your hand.
Motherfuck, the only way you...
Now, what we're switching to here is something that's a little more interesting. But let me say again, the two people I was interviewing, Fish and Sam... did go back to Jack's. They were readmitted, as were all other homeless people that I talked to who had an experience with Jack's, and there have been no complaints about it. So thank you, Connie of Jack's, and thanks to the homeless population of Santa Cruz as well for standing up for their rights and at the same time respecting, apparently, as because I haven't heard any complaints from Connie, the co-owner, the Jack's establishment. Would the... All disputes could be resolved this way. There is an interesting sort of sidelight to this, which I wanted to bring up, and I actually put it out as an email. There, if you're interested in these kinds of issues, there is a frequent email that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, puts out. You can get on that email if you want to read more about what's going on in Santa Cruz and other cities around the homeless civil rights struggle. If you're interested in that, just give me a call at 423-HUF, 423-4833. That's my off-air number. Leave me your email address, and I'll put you on the list. Warning, you may get up to two or three emails a day on some days because it's kind of sporadic. We sometimes get more information and send it out. So you can always, of course, ask to be discontinued, and you know, no solicitors will knock. So there's that. This, however, was sent out recently. It's from the Bratton Online website. Bruce Bratton was a local columnist for the Santa Cruz Metro, now the Santa Cruz Weekly, fired perhaps for being too uppity. I never thought of him as extremely uppity, but apparently the Metro did. And he wrote this after actually sending me an email and requesting some information about the Calvary Episcopal Church. Paul Lee versus Cynthia Matthews and the Christians. The Reverend Dr. Paul Lee, longtime crusader for the masses and especially the homeless, we won't get into my opinion about that, thought it would be a great idea to invite Ronnie Curry to move the Monday night coffee house food for the homeless weekly dinner from the Elm Street Gospel Church to the Calvary Episcopal Church at Lincoln and Cedar to provide a dinner for 50 to 150 homeless kids. And then there's a link... www.coffeehouseattheredchurch.blogspot.com for those who are interested in that. Paul Lee calls this a minor, maybe even a major miracle of helping these kids at least once a week. Many have no sleeping bags, may even have deeper problems, but they all help out to make this a wonderful event every Monday night. Father Joel Miller at the Calvary Church shares Paul's enthusiasm. Then the kids, feeling some kind of welcome, began staying around on the church on other days. The elderly, skin-flinted, dried-up, gray-haired members of Calvary hit the fan, says Paul, exhibiting fear, xenophobia, and a terrible lack of communication. They wanted to close down the Monday night operation. Many letters from neighbors such as the Boys and Girls Club, the Nickelodeon, Jack's Burgers, all said it was okay with them to have the kids around there. But Mayor Cynthia Matthews, who owns the Zazu Pitts House next to the Nickelodeon, had private meetings with some of those church elders. There was a meeting of the vestry last week, this was about a month and a half ago, to discuss a three-month suspension of the Monday nights. The suspension was roundly defeated. About 20 people spoke on behalf of the kids, and a few spoke against them. Paul said, "It's amazing to see and experience such hate coming from a church group." He hasn't been around very long. Actually, Paul's been around quite a long time. I'm surprised he finds it surprising. "It's become a local theater now, with the mayor fighting the homeless more openly than any other battle we've seen so far." Reverend Lee said that Monday nights are well-run, magical, and that it's a Copernican argument. The earth is round, and it'll all come full circle. Having attended the Penny University for the last 68 Monday nights, which happens right on the other side of the door to the Monday night coffee house room, I can certainly attest to the politeness, the care, and the true family feeling that happens there, and Ronnie Curry should be given a key to the city for organizing and running such a timely, needed miracle. And the reason I read the story to you is not because I'm a big fan of Bruce Bratton or Paul Lee, but on this issue we are all together, not to mention Ronnie Curry. And I believe the Monday Night Coffee House is still operational. I talked to Anna Richardson and Miguel De Leon a couple nights ago, and they'd gotten there just as the coffee house was ending and gotten a little food still last Monday night. The reason I mention it is because the issue of this exclusionary perspective that Mayor Matthews and other council members and some businesses are pushing is a true evil thing. It is something that is just simply wrong-headed, it's ignorant, it's bigoted, it's arrogant, and it's unjust. And the only way, there may, I guess, many ways to deal with it, and I'm glad if Paul Lee can, you know, mobilize, you know, internally and get people to vote in favor of supporting this Monday night coffee house, that's great. Of course, what isn't said in this Bratton Online is that while the coffee house goes on, the church has shut down the lawns to homeless people all the rest of the week, with the exception of Wednesday, when with the farmer's market across the street, this is not practical to do because they'd have to, deal with that. Now, they have to deal with a larger crowd of people. They have to discriminate. You know, there's a lot of people around on that day. But actually, what happened some Mondays ago, and this is an issue that I described way back when, almost a month ago this happened, we were organizing for the first protest downtown against the injunction that Anna Richardson and Miguel De Leon are suffering under the sleeping ban criminalization, that if they get a sleeping ban arrest downtown in their forbidden zone, which is the entire downtown area, they can go directly to jail, even though there's no legal place for them to go sleep in the entire city. And we were planning our protest. We were planning it on the lawn of Calvary Episcopal on one of the Monday nights when this coffee house was being held. And I believe this tape you're about to hear describes, gives you some of the storm and drawing, the passion of what was going on at that time.
So it is 22.
Stand up in force, and this shit's dispersing already. Take the force right now.
This, we were never meaning to have a
okay,
protest
I,
today.
Look, I see. Okay, I see. Now. I
we
see.
Walk down the
I see.
Street without
I,
getting arrested.
I see.
No shit.
I see.
Let's
everybody.
It's legal to be naked in Santa Cruz.
It is legal to.
Anyway, we're off the property on the sidewalk. What happened here was that the Pastor Joel Miller came over. You're hearing one guy angrily. It sounds a little intoxicated, actually, but he wasn't doing this before Miller demanded everybody move to the sidewalk from off the grass. This was a meeting where we were just trying to plan another hopefully successful public protest around discrimination against homeless people. And insofar as Joel Miller was in favor of ending this discrimination, I was just very surprised that he demanded we move off into the sidewalk. I was outraged and astonished that it happened. But in any case, here's some more of that actual meeting that we had, that planning meeting.
20 to 6.
Does nobody understand that hitting people?
Everybody, hold it, hold it. Every, hey. Flashlight. Quiet, everybody, please. Quiet, please. Quiet,
Gabe.
Quiet, everybody. Quiet, please. Okay. So, I think it's important that because there's been an issue raised about. We want to respect the tranquility of the church. We want to respect the church property. I disagree with Father Joel and what he's done. But we're in the middle of a meeting here trying to make decisions about issues we were talking about before. We don't want to let ourselves be distracted. One suggestion has been a march down Pacific Avenue. There's a little support for that. I don't think there's as much support as you need. That's my feeling, because people aren't quite probably convinced of that.
Fucking wimps.
Perhaps.
You never win.
Right. And, you know, but I'm not vetoing.
Your insults only make us want to believe you more, sir.
Yep.
Yeah, right.
Well, he's passionate about it. A lot of people are passionate about these issues because
he's
they feel...
intoxicated
and
to the point
he's,
where he's
also,
going to explain.
He's also intoxicated, too. But that's another story. Anyway, there's an agenda that's been set up here, which we were talking about. And as everybody got seen that agenda, looked over the... Or do we want to use that agenda, or people want to talk about other stuff? I think what we want to do is figure out...
I know the agenda. I'm going to clean up trash.
she's going to clean up the trash.
I've cleaned up.
What? Looking over this agenda, what do you think you want to do of these proposals? People looked over the proposals that have been written down.
We got to take back the public name, you know? Cops are public property. Everything they're doing is the work of the public. So,
were you next?
If I could be.
Yeah, can you? Go ahead.
I'd like to remind people that what you're basically asking for is to be included as members of a community.
Yeah.
You want to belong here. You need to treat yourselves with respect and others with respect to people that you are in conflict
Amen.
With. You want to have a relationship with these people when you're done. You want to have a better relationship than you have now. And that's
need,
all I have
to
say.
To
here, take this.
The only way it'll ever get, that we'll ever get anything done is by changing the way people see us. People generalize one or two or three homeless people do something screwed up or fucked up or yell at people, and everybody gets the blame for it. Why is it that when, you know, people live in houses and are serial killers and do that, and nobody blames the whole living in house community? So the thing is, basically, we need to make it so that the public doesn't see us all as scumbags. So I think if we go about this all by doing some big scumbag, asshole, dickhead, rah, 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 it's not going to help. It'll make us all feel real tough. And we'll all have big egos, and we'll all get to spend a night in jail and feel real cool, but that's all it's going to do.
Okay, well, rather than talk about what you don't want to do, maybe you should talk about what you do want to do.
I think I already said that. Though,
well,
so.
Maybe what we should do is have a proposal from people as to what they think they want to do next.
Yeah, talking about it.
I have a solid proposal.
Okay, well, but did you want to say something first about a proposal? Do you have a suggestion about
that?
What you want to do?
Go
for it.
That's great. Now, one thing I'd like to say about what's going on here and now and what we all came here for is that we cannot be discriminated against for sleeping, for existing. We want to be a part of the community, like that guy says, with all the respect as everyone gets. Now, there's obviously a crowd of people here who are here for this event that are not included in this the Red Church event. So I would say that rather than make a conglomeration of everybody, we take our Make Homeless List legal now, start at City Hall tomorrow, grab up all the people that are there that show up, and walk up and down the street with signs saying, Make Homelessness Legal Now. That's all I got to say.
Okay. So that's one proposal. Does Bernard? There you go.
You know, I like your idea, but I think the it should, you know, say something about the sleeping ban, because a lot of people might not know what that means.
Breathe a little more, just a little louder.
Okay.
Would you propose to...
I would say, you know, that the science should say, like, you know, end the sleeping ban with a small explanation of what it is, you know, on the sign. Because making homeless legal now, a lot of people might not understand what that means.
Yeah.
No.
Signs need to be clear and precise.
Yeah.
It sounds like you're good at making signs. Maybe you should come up with some ideas.
Okay, we have somebody who wants to talk.
Many of them.
There's somebody else, and then you're next after that. Go ahead.
I haven't seen it myself. I've been told the new camping ticket thing gives you a mandatory $1,000 fine and jail time. I happen to know from my research that being in jail, they get a subsidy for every day you're in jail. So this is pure profit, and it should be challenged on the ground of unconstitutionality. Because that's life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. You almost can't avoid getting arrested.
Thank you.
So,
actually, that's not accurate. Although, in theory, an infraction can be punished by a $1,000 fine, and the city code, it's actually... sleeping ban tickets are the only infractions that are limited to essentially, at the moment, to $97, and they're limited. Though it actually it's $20 in the city code, but all the rest are add-on fees from the courts that don't go to the city. It actually was reduced back in 1999 when a special task force to examine the camping ordinance, instead of throwing it out, as was recommended by the Homeless Issues Task Force later, they simply did a little cosmetic change under Mayor Catherine Byers, who essentially sold out the homeless activists. So we all had Byers remorse, as we like to call it. Anyway, yeah, it's not accurate to say you're going to get a $1,000 fine. It is true that three unattended infractions, and that includes sleeping ban infractions, kind of a backdoor way of changing the law that had been changed in 1999 to require that sleeping not be a jailing infraction, that you can't summon someone to jail for sleeping. Now you can, again, because of what the council did in February. If three sleeping tickets or one sleeping ticket and two other infractions are ignored, then you can be charged with a misdemeanor crime of not attending to your tickets, which is a misdemeanor. You might say, well, that's not sleeping, but if they're sleeping tickets, it really amounts to pretty much the same thing if you can't attend to the tickets anyway.
So we have, yeah, it's fine. The cops, you know, they're paid with our taxpayer dollars. Hopefully they will enforce the law and not harass us. So
he's talking on his cell phone over there.
That's fine. Don't worry about the police. Let's worry about what we're going
to
do.
You want me to pull the camera out if they come?
Yeah, for sure.
Do you want this bag?
Yeah. Hey, so what we're discussing here, and grab an agenda if you want, Lee. There's a little flyer over there. Yeah, there's an agenda.
You always have an agenda.
I have an agenda.
Where is the agenda?
It's right there.
Oh, okay.
So there's been a proposal about City Hall tomorrow. The City Hall will be open tomorrow. The problem with City Hall is it's pretty isolated. It's not on downtown. The merchants aren't there. You do get, you know, city employees coming. We've done many protests at City Hall in years past, and they've been ignored, although we did a successful protest where we slept out six nights at City Hall in a thing called Homies for the Homeless back in September of 2007. Thanks. So that's
one
a
question.
Yeah?
On that point, when that happened, how much support was there compared to what we have?
How much support? You know, there was actually we actually began it with protests in front of a bookshop in Santa Cruz. Every Sunday we tabled, and we let people know that we were going to go to the City Hall. At that time there was a federal court decision that said you cannot give a person a ticket unless there is a shelter space. That decision has since been set aside. It hasn't been overturned, but it is not as active a decision. It's called the Jones decision, and it affected.
It
became a settlement in Los Angeles and a settlement in San Diego. They've changed their laws at night for sleeping. You know. And I'm giving a long answer to this because maybe it's useful information to people. So we went to City Hall because we actually wanted to get sleeping tickets that we could then challenge in court. We also had an active lawsuit going against the sleeping ban at that time. And everybody, you're next. Then you're next. And I got more to say about this, but it's all about City Hall and whether it's a good place to go. And I can tell you more about that whole thing if and when you want to hear it.
Here.
I've been given much advice on this particular issue, basically. I've been told there was a similar case to Miguel and Annis that was passed in Florida, where I'm from, you know, one place I'm from. And basically, it was brought to the Supreme Court, and it was passed in the Supreme Court. They won their case in the Supreme Court. If we could somehow raise the funds to get this to the Supreme Court, and that pro bono judge who was so nice to, like, support them then would support them once again, this is completely unconstitutional. So it would definitely pass.
I just question, what town? Do you know what town in Florida?
I don't know the actual town. I don't.
Miami, Florida, and Fort Lauderdale. Both.
There we go. And if we could do that, if we could raise money enough to pay for the lawyer, we could just end this now. We could end it real cleanly. We wouldn't have to even protest.
Aaron, stand out of the way if you can so people can walk by.
Well,
we wouldn't even have to protest. But
a Supreme Court doing that, it would take months, if not years, to get to that point.
But you know what? It would be attained. But in the meantime, we can do things like go to the businesses who actually filed the suits against Anna and Miguel, who would be likely to file suits against others like ourselves. We would be able to protest that, target their paychecks. We would be able to maybe change their policies, maybe get them to drop their suits.
Aaron is next, I think. Aaron, you have something you want to say? And then you're next.
Well, to be honest with you, I'd kind of like to take this part off the record.
Make it what?
Take it off the record.
Yeah?
Okay.
So maybe another attorney might get involved. So a lot of these are long-term solutions in terms of legal solutions. The reason I mention the lawsuit is because part of our protest in sleeping overnight at City Hall was we didn't mind if the police gave tickets because we felt there would be evidence that the city is giving citations for sleeping but no legal place for people to go to sleep. And that is a form of the courts were holding at that time cruel and unusual punishment under the Eighth Amendment. They have since not quite given away that decision, but they kind of put it aside, so it has to be argued all the way again. That doesn't mean it isn't true. There are lawsuits in Santa Barbara and in Sacramento around this issue, so it is happening. So, the reason I raise this issue is because if we want to figure out something to do before we break up this meeting, the proposal on the table is to protest at City Hall or possibly somewhere else. And I think that the thing to do is to decide when and where we want to do that, how we want to do it if we do, how many people can be involved, what kind of preparations we need, and whether that's the best idea to do. And this is all up to you guys. I mean, he's next, and then you're next.
All in favor?
Bernard.
Bernard. I would argue, that if you do it at City Hall, we're going to be isolated. I think we should be able to do it in the front of one of the complaining merchants on Pacific Avenue, so we can start to make movement and talk to people. Well, if we go to City Hall, there's not going to be anybody there.
Well, unless we get the idea involved in the community.
You want to talk?
He needs to talk. Yeah. You need to talk.
Well,
hold the flashlight.
I think that overall, it doesn't matter where you stand unless you inform, the media and community groups to be there and to see it, witness it. Otherwise, it's just the city employees getting bent out of shape.
Well, we're not talking about City Hall. We're talking about businesses. That's why you go downtown to the businesses.
Invite everyone either way.
Right, but they don't usually come. What the people you get are the tourists passing by, and it freaks out the businesses because they're afraid they're going to lose money.
That's the only thing.
They usually aren't, but they're afraid of it anyway. So.
I think because of how we're doing this right now, standing on the sidewalk, leaving space, this needs to be done quickly. So, we have all the time in the world to. Future meetings to discuss long-term plans about fighting the lawsuit, right?
Yes.
Everyone pretty much agreed on that.
Yeah.
So why don't we decide what we want to do in the short term? Say on a weekend day, maybe this weekend, either Friday or Saturday, we all meet up. Everybody here who decides right now that's interested, we all meet up somewhere downtown, and we have people who have signs prepared, and we stand in the legal spots where we can't be hassled, put a few people, two or three, however many, depends on however many people we have, in front of the offending businesses, and by doing that, if we could get tables too,
at each one of the sites, that would be awesome. And by doing that, we will A, get more people, we will attract more people to our cause, B, we'll inform the public, C, it might very well bring media attention, and we'll be doing it all in like a nice, respectful, and polite manner without acting like a bunch of dickheads. Because in my opinion, there's no reason to be a dickhead just because you don't have a place to stay. And I think everybody's opinion of it is because a few homeless people act like dickheads, that everybody's a dickhead. And I think that's what needs to be dispelled. It's like, I am a firm believer in politeness. If you treat people with politeness most of the time, 50% of the people will treat it back to you. The other 50% won't be able to get around how you look.
Okay, I see Lee has his hand up, and then you have your hand up. I just want to say briefly that they're going to regard you as dickheads no matter how polite you are until you get some power, but I see nothing wrong with being gracious.
I understand, but I'm
and being civil about stuff, so I think that's
it'll
fine.
It'll be better, so my turn.
Your turn.
Okay, I want to fine-tune the agenda here.
Amen.
Regarding the ending the open container law, I have a problem with that. That's okay, because this is an issue. It goes around and it'll help you fine-tune your agenda.
Okay.
Drinking in public is a problem in Santa Cruz. Drinking in public is a problem in Santa Cruz. There is no way you will ever end the open container law. It's a red herring.
Yeah.
However, what can be done, and has happened to me, is when the police approach you and you're not immediately submissive to them, what they end up doing is saying, what's in that soda you're drinking? Or what's in your coffee cup? Can we see that? That's the thing that needs to be ended. The presumption that because you're not responding to them like a sheep, that you are under the influence.
Right. I think it's important to know your rights forums. I think that's true.
Once.
Yeah.
Wow. But that's what I had to say, just a fine-tuning of your agenda.
And I believe... Thank you.
Can we agree to meet again? Because we're not going to finish any of these things today. We can talk about them. When can we meet? When can we meet?
Let's establish a meeting time. Is a great meeting place.
Noon.
Is anybody in favor of the proposal I said to meet somewhere on, say, Friday or Saturday? And
we need to put a date on it.
Well, I'd say the sooner the better.
Yeah, the sooner the better, or the issue will get stale.
Do we want to do it in an unorganized way? Because right now we're not organized.
Okay. Why don't we say, who all is willing to meet at Loudon Nelson tomorrow? Or 2 days from now?
What about the Huff meeting?
Yeah, we do have a Huff
meeting. When is the Huff meeting?
We have a Huff meeting.
Why don't we all meet there then with a tentative plan to do.
And just a pitch for the Huff meeting. Huff meets every Wednesday at 9:30 at the Sub Rosa Cafe, which is on Pacific Avenue, about a block from the Saturn Cafe, across from the Chinese restaurant up there, the Yan Flower Inn, like it's called. You're listening to an organizing session of homeless activists on the sidewalk, having been kicked off the lawn of Calvary Episcopal, who are organizing what has been happening for the last 4 weeks and will happen again on Saturday, a protest and boycott of businesses that essentially support criminalization of the homeless, either actively or by default. And we're focusing on one particular business, that's Bunny Shoes downtown on July 4th, and that protest is coming up. I'm going to play a little bit more of this. Actually, I think we're going to stop right here because too much to play and not enough time to play it. And just a couple of quick things. Here's an interesting article. You can pick this up from the Post, which is a free paper that comes out, I think, every other week, maybe even weekly now. The July 1st issue has an article by Mary Bryant and Linda Friday. Mobile home rent control ban passed by California Assembly. It's a very significant and ominous sign. I'm going to just draw a couple things from the story. On June 22nd, California's Assembly rejected a bill by Southern California Assemblyman Charles Calderon of Whittier to ban mobile home rent control in the state, which is a good thing because mobile home rent control means there is a ceiling on what these clowns can charge people who have their mobile homes. And you know, it's kind of a the last step before homelessness is a mobile home, or actually the last step might be a car on the street, but it's a modest way of living. However, 3 days later, on June 25th, a week ago, the same bill passed the Assembly, that's the California State Legislature lower house, 41-25 votes, and is now headed for the state Senate. Newly elected Assemblyman Bill Monning opposed the legislation, voting against the bill on two occasions. Monning says there may be time to stop the bill at the state Senate. Santa Cruz city officials gave up rent control in our city. That's under Rotkin and Matthews, our vice mayor and mayor at the present time. They gutted the rent control at De Anza back in, I think it was 2002. However, Capitola, Scotts Valley, and the county vigorously maintain their rent control laws, not for ordinary mortals who are in apartments, but for those who are in mobile homes. So you got to get yourself a mobile home and then move to Capitola, Scotts Valley, or the county, and you still have rent control. Until, of course, this latest bill, this crappy bill by Assemblyman Charles Calderon of Whittier, passes. It's an interesting article, talks more about this. The problem with removing rent control, even though the Rotkin and Matthews and the city council remove rent control from the only two really rent-controlled mobile homes, mobile home areas for those in the city that exist. That's one of them was De Anza, and the other one was Clearview Court. They did a sort of a bait and switch number where they said, oh, well, you're not going to lose rent control because the rent control will only disappear once the mobile home changes hands. But, of course, that means you lose all equity in your mobile home. That is to say, you can't sell it. You can't will it to your son or anything, and because at that point the rent control disappears when the original owner either sells or dies. And so it's a way of killing rent control, but trying to kind of buy off the people who are there and saying, well, as long as you're alive and you live in it, you will have rent control. But once that's gone, you can kiss your inheritance to your children goodbye. Everybody who wants to use that space as a rent control space henceforth can kiss it goodbye. And the profiteers, can rub their hands with glee. It's an interesting article. It points out that in De Anza, there's a rent control, which has been destroyed. Rent control was destroyed by the Rotkin Matthews City Council. The rent is $3,800 per month. And the top, an almost new coach is on the market being sold for $107,000. Whereas in a rent-controlled area in Capitola, under the rent control ordinance, a smaller mobile home is on the market for $300,000, $299,000, and because the rent space is controlled, and it's only $500 a month. So the rent is actually eight times as much in De Anza without rent control, and yet the value of the coach being sold is one-third as much. In other words, your ability to get money for your mobile home has just plummeted because of the destruction of rent control. And now they're considering, the state legislature is considering destroying rent control for mobile homes all over the state. This is going to be sent for review to the Housing and Transportation Committee, on which State Senator Joe Simitian sits. I believe he's your local state senator. And then the bill will be reviewed by the rather than sending it for review to the Housing and Transportation Committee. Sorry, it's going to be reviewed by the Senate Judicial Committee. It's got to win the support of three of the Judicial Committee's five members in order to move through the Senate. That committee has three Democrats and two Republicans. Some believe the best hope to defeat the rent decontrol initiative is for the committee to defeat the law before senators get a chance to vote. So if you're into this kind of stuff, and I don't usually get into legislative stuff because it's labyrinthine and usually rather ineffective, but this is such a grotesque destruction of one of the last remaining things that'll stop a whole bunch of people from getting homeless and losing the value in their homes, their mobile homes. I thought I'd mention it. You can read more about this in the July 1st issue of The Post. Again, mobile home rent control bill has passed the Assembly, gone to the Senate, and it's now waiting to be rammed down the throats of everybody in California unless one of those Democrats, or all three of those Democrats, actually say no. A couple of other things I'm looking for here. I kind of run through papers usually and go through a couple of interesting articles, which I don't usually have time to read or take time to read. There's another interesting article in the Post about a roustabout. It was almost like a conflict that happened at the county building where a guy called Vince LaFranco, who is concerned about an issue that we've actually talked about on the air, the county's destruction of its Board of Appeals over the planning department. Planning department has gotten rubbed a lot of homeowners the wrong way and has essentially stepped outside the law in not informing the community about their right to have a board of a permit appeals. And so the board was created in order to stop a lawsuit. And then the supervisors gutted the Board of Permit Appeals after firing the chair, or actually the chair resigned in protest because the Board of Supervisors didn't want their precious planning department second-guessed by a Board of Permit Appeals, which is what, of course, a Board of Permit Appeals would do. And this guy, Vince LaFranco, claimed that the planning director, Tom Burns, assaulted him, allegedly at the door of the planning department offices. And the interesting thing here, and I think I may have mentioned this on the air before, was this newspaper, The Post, talked to Santa Cruz police officer Zach Friend, and LaFranco, after he felt he was assaulted, said he was assaulted by the planning department director, Tom Burns, who apparently was... He's the guy that's been opposing, well, a number of the bureaucrats and the supervisors have killed the Board of Permit Appeals, and that was done at a Board of Supervisors hearing a couple of weeks ago. But he was a high-profile figure in this whole conflict, and he allegedly, according to Vince LaFranco, he was assaulted by Burns. LaFranco didn't want to talk to sheriff's deputies. Instead, he advised the law officers that he wanted the city police called because the board, the county building is inside the city and so under the jurisdiction of the city. So he called the cops, and the cops came, and apparently they refused to take charges, a charge of assault against this hoity-toity Tom Burns, the planning director, from this guy Vince LaFranco. And the reason they did it was, according to the Post, who contacted city police spokesman Zach Friend, you may remember that name. Friend is the notorious police propagandist who comes to meetings and tells these little committees either nothing or tells them essentially about the great crime menace and how new laws supporting more police power are a great idea. He apparently told this newspaper, The Post, that a surveillance video of the alleged assault had been reviewed, and the police had cleared this guy, Tom Burns, and so they weren't, and instead they were going to charge the guy who called the cops, LaFranco, the guy who said he'd been assaulted. It sounds a little bit like Donna Dice case, where Sergeant Christian Lamas, who assaulted her and broke her arm, instead of his being dismissed or even and then charged with criminal behavior, he charged her with resisting arrest. And the result of that case, of course, was she pled to one charge of littering, but is still pursuing a lawsuit against him for excessive force, which sounds like it has a good chance of succeeding. Anyway, back to this article in the county building. Zach Friend said, oh, you can't, you know, we're going to charge this other guy. The guy, essentially the citizen, is going up against the bureaucrats because we have video surveillance. But it turns out that there aren't any video surveillance cameras in the county building. This was posted apparently on the SCPD website and then quickly taken down. City Attorney John Barisoni told the Post June 25th that no charges will be filed. The only person who was, according to the story, who had a video camera there was LaFranco, and both he and a witness say that police never asked to see if there was any footage from this June 2nd incident. So if the police were so concerned about video footage, you would have thought they would have asked to see his footage, but no. They simply dismissed this on the basis of non-existent video footage. which is kind of funny, but not really that funny, because it shows you how corrupt and how concerned the police are with essentially backing up city bureaucrats, powerful city bureaucrats. Again, LaFranco said, according to the story, that Burns shoved him and caused him to fall as he stood in the still-closing doorway. The officer who responded to LaFranco's call determined that no assault had occurred and forwarded his report to the city attorney to determine if LaFranco had violated the city's trespassing ordinance, which requires that someone leave a business premises when asked. This is the same law I was convicted under recently and am appealing at the Metro. It's a kind of one of these catch-all laws that ignores the rights of the citizen in public places like the county building and allows bureaucrats, and cops, and private security guards to essentially walk all over you. And then if you protest, to have you arrested for trespass. It's quite a racket, and we'll see where it goes. The city attorney said he hasn't seen any videotape and no one mentioned it to me. When asked if the report mentioned any tape, he replied, "Not that I recall." Although the original police report, according to both this story and independent reports I've heard from people who are either present or had friends who were present at this incident, that Zach Friend made a definite commitment that he had looked at the video footage and there was no cause for being concerned about this bureaucrat Burns assaulting the citizen Vince LaFranco. LaFranco, meanwhile, questions why a tape was mentioned at all to reporters when none was reviewed. He repeatedly called the SAPD asking about the report. He and Smith went in person June 22nd to request a copy of the report. He was told he must fill out a request and could not get it for 10 days. In theory, if you want a Public Records Act, if you make a Public Records Act request, it takes 10 days. But if it concerns you, at least the city police, as of 10 years ago, where it was required to provide it to you forthwith. If they have it, they don't need 10 days to do it, and you should be able to get it free, particularly if it concerns you as the victim or as the alleged perpetrator, unless they're charging you with something, which they're not. So that's what's happening. It's from The Post, that interesting article. It's a free newspaper. You can find it downtown. And that's only one of other many articles I've set aside and, of course, have no time to read. I have also some online stuff. There's a really long, interesting article online which talks about an issue I've been following on this program, the police murder of Oscar Grant III. That's the African-American guy who on January 1st got shot in the back of the head by security guard Johannes Merzerle. And there was recently, about a month ago, a preliminary hearing. There's an interesting story. If you go to the East Bay Indie Media, that's indiebay.org/East Bay, the People versus Johannes Merzerle, days 6 and 7 of the preliminary hearing by a man called Rekia Gibran. And he reports the following concerns: inconsistencies in testimonies and court transcripts, aggressive and violent behavior, distortion of truth in testimony, and the counter-narratives of video footage. What he's talking about is the attempt of the defense lawyers of this security guard, Bart's police officer, who is now at large on $3 million bail in a murder charge, to try to get this case moved out of the county. And I'm going to read a little bit about this. Days 6 and 7 of the People versus Johannes Merzerle's preliminary hearing ended with pained and emotional breaths of relief. After 7 days of testimony from 18 witnesses, Judge C. Don Clay ruled on June 4, 2009, that without a doubt, Johannes Merzerle intended to shoot Oscar Grant with a gun and not a taser. That was the excuse he was using. And I've talked about this like many months ago, how improbable, not only improbable, actually, I guess you could say improbable if you're looking, since anything, I suppose, is possible. But maybe some things aren't really possible. The idea that this huge, hefty, orange taser could be mistaken for a smaller gun, it requires preparation to shoot, it requires different things. The idea that Merzerle meant to taser the guy, but instead pulled out a gun and shot him instead, was dismissed months ago. And I think in an effective story that I was reading, and I read aloud on this station, and you can actually go back to read and check the archives for that story. Look up Oscar Grant III, Free Radio Santa Cruz, Robert Norris, and you'll probably find it. I didn't write it. I simply read it. And the where, again, the place to find it is look into the archives of Free Radio's, actually of my archives on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, which is where you'll find this show eventually. Marzulli will stand trial for the murder and deaths of Oscar Grant. God is our justice. God is our justice. God is our justice. And justice prevailed here today. Justice prevailed here today. The resounding words of Grant's godmother, that's Oscar Grant, the murdered man's godmother, on the microphone outside of the Alameda courthouse, held the tears and exhaustion of Grant's fellow members and friends. Bart and Oakland police, dressed in SWAT team uniforms, silently looked on from across Oak Street in downtown Oakland. One of many community organizers, Tony Coleman, who was stationed outside of the Alameda courthouse each day of the preliminary hearing keeping Oscar Grant's death in the minds of passers-by, stated, "It is time the Oakland police know that they too can face murder charges. Oakland is taking a stand for the world." The last 2 days of the hearing involved the testimony of Officer Tony Perrone, media analyst Michael Schott, and BART Officer Foreman, as well as the concluding statements of the prosecuting attorney David Stein and defense attorney Michael Raines. Seated within the courtroom were the families, and actually it's a long story. It's really interesting, but I have 12 minutes left on the air, so I'm going to have to leave this perhaps for another time. Recommend it to you. You can get it on, as I said before, indiebay.org/eastbay. And the name of the story, again, is The People versus Johannes Marzulli, Day 6 and 7 of the Preliminary Hearing. And there's a lot of comments on, I'll just quickly read, I read before these items, but perhaps it wasn't clear what I was talking about. This is what came out as far as the writer of this article is concerned when he heard the preliminary hearing. Inconsistencies in testimonies and court transcripts, aggressive and violent behavior by the police, distortion of truth in testimony, and the counter-narratives of video footage. In other words, the cops said one thing, and then you look at the video and you see something absolutely different. Racialized profanity and the use and the language of excessive force. Excessive force, excessive profanity to establish police authority. Racializing youths and the aggressive use of weapons, again by police, misconduct in police procedure and practice, misrepresentation of youth resistance to justify excessive force, misconstruing threat and the misuse of legal semantics, fear of youths, criminalizing youths to justify police violence, and the blue wall of silence and a contrived defense. So check all that if you want, again, on indiebay.org/eastbay, a story about Johannes Marzulli. I actually was listening to Democracy Now! Today, and I picked up some interesting stories, which I don't really need to go into because a lot of people who listen to this show also listen to Democracy Now!, and there's not really much need to do that. But just briefly noting that the Obama administration is being accused of relying on statements obtained through torture to justify the ongoing jailing of a prisoner at Guantanamo Bay. On Wednesday, the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union, asked a federal judge to throw out statements made by Afghan prisoner Mohammad Jawad. The ACLU says Jawad was abused, threatened, and deprived of sleep in U.S. custody. Jawad's case has received further scrutiny because it's believed he was jailed when he was 12 years old. It's a guy who's been held in Guantanamo, don't know for how long, but I imagine for quite a number of years. Then there's, of course, the current controversy about Honduras. In Honduras, as you know, there was a coup, or you may know, but if you read the papers, listen to the radio. It's a little country about, what, 7 million people south of Guatemala, which is just south of Mexico, north of Nicaragua and Central America. There has been some response to the president being thrown out by the generals. The president was making some, you know, some noises and moves in favor of broader rights for people and poor people, and he got dumped by the generals, who are, I guess they felt their own institutional structure was threatened too. He wanted there to be a vote on a resolution to convene a constitutional convention, or rather there would be, he wanted to have a referendum coming right up in the next few days on whether there should be an addition to the ballot in this coming November, should there be a constitutional convention. And the powers that be didn't want him to do that, and they shipped him out of the country instead of allowing that vote to happen. I got an email from Grand Junction, Colorado, from homeless activists. On Monday, June 29th, the city of Grand Junction tried to pass two emergency ordinances outlawing soliciting, also known as flying a sign or spanging. What stopped the city from moving forward with these laws was a strong, large, and loud group of homeless people and younger radicals. On Monday, June 29th, the city of Grand Junction tried to pass two emergency ordinances. No one came to support the law, and over 100 people came to oppose it. Solidarity, not charity, our food not bombs out here in Grand Junction, provided food and water serving on the city hall's lawn. Live tunes were provided by the local band Fast Food Kings and out-of-towners Chicken Little, who were cool about relocating from the info shop to City Hall to play. The city voted unanimously against one statute and 5-2 in favor of the other one, but since they were trying to pass these laws without the usual democratic process, they needed to pass unanimously. In other words, they needed the vote, kind of like the medical marijuana moratorium. They needed that vote apparently needs 6 of the 7 council members in the Santa Cruz vote that happened a week ago Tuesday, stopping all applications for medical marijuana clubs. This was apparently a similar situation in Grand Junction as far as the requiring an unusual number of people to vote on the city council in favor of it, probably because it was being pushed as an emergency ordinance. The city will now begin the process of bringing these ordinances through the proper process. While people ate food and listened to the music outside of City Hall in Grand Junction, Colorado, and others were speaking to the council, a banner appeared on an adjacent building that read, "We are everywhere." Those in opposition held signs during the meeting saying things like, "Homelessness is not illegal, God bless, and we'll work for free speech," and "Asking for help is free speech." They also booed and cheered and were, according to the Grand Junction Police Department sergeant, relatively civil. While stopping the emergency ordinances is a small victory, and the fight will continue, the big victory was that many people started to feel empowered and starting to see some hope. It showed a lot of people on the street what is really possible if we stand together. Little did the city know that was a coalition of radical and homeless people had been forming quietly for months and were about to start publicly organizing and agitating for necessary reforms. Basically, the city threw gasoline right where we were going to start a fire. Next week, Housing First, No More Deaths, will have its first mass meeting, and the name of it is signed Grand Junction Rising. And here's another statement from the same group. The situation is critical in Grand Junction for those of us on the streets. Between constant police harassment and unconcerned and uncaring City Hall, more and more people on the streets, a severe shortage of shelter beds, does any of this sound familiar, and transitional housing, a lack of quality health care, and the tightest job market in generations, there is very little hope for those of us without housing. Something needs to change, and nobody is going to do it for us. We must act on our own. We must act together, shoulder to shoulder, to demand our rights as citizens and humans. This last winter, we lost a lot of friends on the streets, Colorado, of course. This upcoming winter, we will lose even more of our friends unless we do something about it. To save our friends' lives and our own, we must be willing to act. We must organize. We must take risks. We must put unused buildings to good use, keeping our own friends and family warm. We must be able to stand together and demand no more deaths on the streets of Grand Junction, and we must mean it. The city and the police have essentially made being homeless illegal. It's illegal to sleep anywhere if you're not lucky enough to get into the shelter. It's illegal to camp. It's illegal to smoke in the park. When the public bathrooms are closed, there is nowhere to legally go to the restroom, and not to mention selective enforcement of petty laws against us. How are any of us going to get off the streets with piles of petty tickets and fines to pay off? How are smoking in the park tickets serving the community? One or two of us on our own could never hope to confront this unjust justice system, but all of us together can. We can picket the city or police department, put them on notice, or back them off from being overly aggressive. We must demand a legal place for us to camp without fear of trespassing ticket or the city taking our stuff. The current situation must change, and only all of us standing together as one and speaking with one voice will ever hope to change the situation. We are pretty used to getting the short end of the stick from employers, the media, police, banks, hospitals, judges, and government, etc. But it doesn't have to be this way. There are times when we the people have taken just about enough crap from the powers that be where we can start to organize and stand up. If we work together with courage, strength, and love in our hearts, we can begin to push back against a system that has for a long time been waging war against us. Is it going to be easy? No. But it's not impossible. And right now, those seem to be pretty good odds. No more deaths. General meeting. Everyone welcome. Whitman Park, Tuesday, July 7th. This is from Housing First. No more deaths. And this is in Grand Junction, Colorado. They can do it in Grand Junction, although I don't know how big Grand Junction is, and it's certainly colder there in the winter. Why not here? Come down to Bunny Shoes on 4th of July at 1 o'clock. Bring your soapbox. Bring your speech. Bring your copy of the Constitution. And we'll decide what to do next in this struggle to end the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz. What we're trying to do downtown is sort of a small part of this. We are simply asking that stores show support for non-discrimination. Some of them already have, and you can go online to see what those are. Some of them, I saw Badass Coffee today, had put up the non-discrimination pledge. And I have a lot of problems with Badass Coffee and how they've treated homeless people on different occasions. But I'm glad they did that. I hear a knock at the door, and that means to me that it's time for me to start winding down the show. So I want to thank you for listening. Invite you again to come at 1 o'clock on Saturday to Bunny Shoes and come back to this show. If you can't make it to Bunny's and you want to volunteer, you can call the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'll give you something to do. And I'll be coming back at 9:30 on Sunday morning, if not earlier. Let's listen to a little more of the infamous Black Death All-Stars while Dennis sets up his show. And we'll take it from there. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides.
There's an old hollow tree down the road here from me, where they run off a calendar tree. You may go around the bend, but you'll come back again to that good old mountain. They call it that good old Mountain Dew, and have a few of you. I'll hush up a mug if you fill up a jug with that good old Mountain Dew. Well, my brother Bill's got a still on the hill, where he runs off a calendar too. You know the buzz is in the sky, it's a drunk day, can't fly, just smelling that good old Mountain Dew. They call it that good old Mountain Dew, and we'll have a few stars too. I'll hush up my mug if we fill up a jug with that good old Mountain Dew. About 4 foot 2, but he thinks he's a giant when you give him a pint of that good old Mountain Dew. They call it that good old Mountain Dew, and those have a few stars. I'll hush up my mug if you fill up a jug with that good old Mountain Dew. Comes by with a tear in his eye, and he says that his wife got the flu. He said he just stopped to give her a snort of that good old Mountain Dew. Bring it home. They call it that good old Mountain Dew, and those arrow fears are few. I'll push up my mug if you fill up a jug of that good old Mountain Dew. Tracks coming to some shady shack. Oh.
got a little with boy band, yes, me Christian, I've been drinking since 4,000 pounds. Oh, brother man, you said it well, it took my credit straight to hell, was the only way that I could take my coin. I said corn liquor, make yourself a dollar quicker. Corn liquor, me. Oh, corn liquor, doctor, tell me how you figure. Corn liquor, me. To ramble around from town to town, just to keep expenses down. Well, when I die, you bury me under a
Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101 FM, freakradio.org. That was, what are they called, Black Death All-Stars? The Black Death All-Stars, thanks to Robert Norris. You found them on the street. They might be on the street, you know, soon. Who knows? We don't know that. We're just speculating. But he did see them downtown Santa Cruz, and I got to give him his disc before he leaves. Otherwise, it's mine. But I like them. They're good. Devil Makes Three on speed or something. All right. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101 FM, freakradio.org. Operation, cream to the dregs with Uncle Dennis. He is out of town, taking a little vacation, and he pleaded for me to come in on bended knee. And anyway, so here I am, although I'm not going to follow the normal cream to the dregs 60s, 70s music. I'm going to be doing a special 4th of July special. Hopefully 3 hours worth, at least 2 hours worth. We'll see how long we last here. But we're going to be playing a bunch of stuff about our wonderful country, a bunch of music and sound bites and things from movies and all sorts of neat stuff here. You can call in for requests as well. We'll be getting to that. But just in case you're out there and you're offended by bad words and things like that, there's going to be an awful lot of that in some of these songs. So I just want to forewarn you, we are a pirate radio station. And we can say those words. The seven deadly. That's Robert back there saying them in chicken language. Anyway, here we go. We're going to start off. This is going to be a Pop Defect Radio special. 4th of July, 3 hours worth of Codependence Radio. Stay tuned. My tape? You didn't stop my tape. I don't have a tape. I have a CD, which I didn't start, right?
Pop Defect Radio
is a communication to the children to take a trip, to cop out, to groove, to take a trip, to cop out, to take a trip, groove, to take a trip.
All right. Robert's already sabotaging my show here. Robert Norris in the studio sabotaging the show. He already shut off the recorder, so we got to start this all over again.
We don't want no stinking racists in the studio.
From the beginning, this is your 4th of July special Pop Defect Radio. Stay tuned.
We the people. Pop Defect Radio
is a communication to the children to take a trip, to cop out, to groove, to take a trip, to cop out, to take a trip, groove, to take a cop out.
Subversive music for dangerous times.
To take a trip, to groove.
Because America the beautiful is going to hell. We no longer make cars and TVs very well. Our economy's rigged on selling guns and making war. What happens when no one wants our products anymore? America the powerful has hit a decline. Our cities and our people are falling apart. Rich thugs with no vision trying to save their empires. New World Order Mafia with them still in charge. Got one thing left to sell, that's the world police. A mercenary state to ensure there's no peace. We love doing your dirty work, but y'all gotta pay. Mob-style protection money to the U.S. of A.
We're from America, we're from America, where we eat our young. We're from America, we're from America, it's where Jesus was born. From America, where they let you come on and face it.
spy, motherfucker. Face it.
States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.